From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Before the break, we spoke with veteran investigative journalist and now Emory professor Hank Klibanoth about the Justice Department's now 10-year effort to investigate civil rights-era cold cases. Well, last week, the DOJ announced that it is reopening investigation on perhaps the most notorious, or at least most well-known, case, the murder of Emmett Till. Till was kidnapped and killed 63 years ago next month. And today we're learning more about the death and life of Emmett Till with Timothy Tyson. He's senior researcher at Duke University and author of The Blood of Emmett Till. And Timothy, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Virginia. Thanks so much for having me.
Also on the line with us is Katina Rankin. She's a journalist from Mississippi and author of a children's book called Emmett Till, Sometimes Good Can Come Out of a Bad Situation. Katina, good morning.
Good morning, Virginia. How are you?
Very well, but you know, it's a big story, disturbing story, but I've learned so much in just looking into this again. And Timothy, that's what you did. You know, your book was a big book last year and revived interest in this story. Now, the DOJ says it's reopening the case after receiving new information. Do you know what that information is?
I'm led to believe that is information that's in The Blood of Emmett Till, and that in particular has to do with my interview with Carolyn Bryant, who had not given an interview or said a public word about this atrocity since 1955.
Right. You were the only author who ever interviewed her. Then, by that time, she was Carol Bryant Dunham. What did she tell you?
Well, some of the most important things she told me are no one's talking about. Which has to do with, you know, what was going on in the Mississippi Delta in 1955 among poor whites. And the thing that interests people is that she told me she had committed perjury in 1955, singing the old song of the bruised white lily and the black beast rapist that the South has heard for a couple of centuries now to justify all manner of repression and murder against black Southerners.
Right. It was her accusation, Carolyn Bryant's accusation, that enraged her husband, Roy, and his half-brother, both of them charged with murdering Till.
That's not accurate, and it's important to say so. We don't know. The grassroots activists who knew the case best, which were NAACP network across the state, and there in the Delta in particular, Medgar Evers and Amzi Moore and T.R.M. Howard and many others, they thought they knew who had told Roy, which was a man who hung around at the store. When this incident happened across the candy counter, Roy Bryant was out of town. He came back the next day, but it was 3 days after the incident before they went to kidnap Emmett Till. What people say, you know, she lied, Emmett died, you know, very glibly. But the truth is Emmett had been dead for almost a month when she told that lie. It's still possible that she told her husband, but that's not what black activists in Mississippi thought in 1955 who investigated the case. And Carolyn said that she and her sister Juanita made a pact not to tell either of their husbands because they were afraid of what might come of this. We won't ever know for sure
exactly what happened.
But I don't. It doesn't. The what people think that this perjury caused Emmett Till's death, but it occurred at her husband and brother-in-law's murder trial, obviously after Emmett was dead.
Well, that's Medgar Evers was one of those with the aid of the NAACP Mississippi field secretary. Medgar Evers was the field secretary at that time, and other black activists. They were the prosecuting team on this. Is that correct?
I call them the Mississippi Underground. There really was no investigation by the prosecution, which was headed by Sheriff H.C. Strider, who immediately after the murder began saying that this might not have even been Emmett Till's body and so on, he undercutting the investigation for which he was responsible. It was a team. He was in charge of the investigation formally, but these activists did that job. They are the ones who found all of the witnesses. They dressed in sharecroppers' clothing and spread out across the plantations and found people who knew people who had heard about people and found their way to the witnesses in the case. Mm.
Katina Rankin, you've been following this story for a long time, written a children's book about it. And, you know, as we're just hearing from Timothy, there is a conventional narrative that we have about how this event happened. In your research for your book, what were you finding? Any big surprises for you?
You know, I really didn't find any big surprises. I grew up in Mississippi, so of course, every summer, my mother and my grandmother would make me and my siblings watch two things, and that was Roots and the documentary on Emmett Till. Mm. And so, of course, I knew the story. And when I got into journalism, every time there was the anniversary of Emmett Till, his birthday, I would always be required to turn a story. And 2 years ago, maybe almost three, the Emmett Till Interpretive Center opened in Sumner, Mississippi. And I went down to cover that opening. But what I did was is I traced the final steps of Emmett Till. First, I went to the Bryant grocery store, and I stood and I watched there. And then there was a house right beside it, and I was allowed to go inside that house. And from there, I went to Mose Wright property because the house was no longer there. Stood there, took in that. From there, we drove to Drew, Mississippi, to the plantation, that barn, and it was exactly the same. The only difference was is that the floor had been taken up, and that is where they, you know, supposedly, you know, beat Emmett and shot him. Then we went to Glendora, Mississippi, because there was a cotton gin factory there where Roy and J.W. were supposedly gone inside and gotten the cotton gin out and tied that cotton gin around Emmett's neck. And gouged out his eye, and then took him to the Tallahatchie River. And we drove there and stood on the bank where they found Emmett's body and took his body out.
And let's just clarify, Roy Bryant and J.M. Milam, I believe is how you pronounce it, his...
J.W. Milam.
Yeah, was his half-brother. Those are the two who were accused of the murder. It's so gruesome hearing you just retelling that story. I'm wondering, what was your motivation to tell this story for kids?
Let me be absolutely honest with you. After covering that and walking the final steps of Emmett, I could not sleep for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I heard God say, even though I'd seen the documentary every single summer, I heard God say, write a children's book. And I said, oh God, how am I going to do that? This is such a gruesome story. And he said, write it. So the first line of the book, Mommy, What's Wrong With His Face, sat on my phone because that's where I began to write it for an entire year, 365 days. Well, and I remember after that, I get off work about 11 o'clock. And I usually don't go to sleep until around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I remember going to bed around 2, and God woke me up around 4, and he said, write. So I woke up, and the closest thing to me was my telephone, because to be honest, I didn't want to write. I got up, and I wrote the story, and God gave me the words. But as a journalist, and you know this, we're asked to go to different schools and to read. And when I would go during Black History Month, I would ask the students in elementary school, I would ask them in middle school, high school, if they knew Emmett's name. And it was really shocking to me that this generation, or that generation, did not know Emmett Till. And so I thought it was important to introduce a whole new generation to Emmett. You know, you played the soundbite, the sound from Mamie at the beginning of the show. Right. Where she said that she never wanted people to forget what happened to Emmett, and she wanted the story to be told. And so this is just my contribution to middle school students to introduce them to Emmett and who he was. And so, you know, I'm able to tell the story in a kid-friendly way that opens up a dialogue for them to have with their parents about social justice or injustice, and to always remember Emmett's name.
Katina Rankin there. She is the author of a children's book, Sometimes Good Can Come Out of a Bad Situation, about Emmett Till. She's also a journalist from Mississippi. On the line with us also, Timothy Tyson, an historian and author of The Blood of Emmett Till. Now, Timothy, of course, you are retelling this story for another generation. But part of what people don't know, maybe, is about this trial of Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam. We just heard from Hank that the prosecutors were trying to conduct a real trial. The judge, you know, maybe was in the Old South, but also trying to, you know, not make this a sort of monkey court, as they would say. What happened at that trial? Why did they get off?
Emmett Till, in a sense, was a casualty in a war about black voting and public school integration. Those things, there were voting rights activists in Mississippi that very summer who were assassinated. One of them on the courthouse lawn in Brookhaven, not 10 feet from the sheriff. Nobody ever prosecuted in those murders. It's very important. Katrina Rankin's work is very important. And I love the title of her book, too, Sometimes Good Can Come Out of a Bad Thing. At this point, what I think, you know, it's important to remember Emmett and the horror of it all. But what matters most about this unfathomable evil is not just the crucifixion of a small boy in 1955 in the name of white supremacy, but this ongoing resurrection that his brilliant and brave mother and her allies wrung from it. You know, Mamie and her activist allies mustered the community organizations of Chicago, Black Chicago's strength, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the United Packing House Workers, the Chicago Defender, and the Johnson Publishing Company, and the Dawson Machine, which is the most powerful black political machine in the world, probably. And those are organizations, a big NAACP branch that was headed by labor union militants. Those organizations had national scope. They organized a huge movement with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people all across the country protesting the lynching and then the acquittals of the men accused of killing him. And they, had it not been for the fact that Emmett was from Chicago, and had it not been for the fact that over six decades, Black Chicago had organized itself, then we would have never heard Emmett's name. And I think today it's very important for young activists to remember that these democratic institutions are where power resides. And it's not just a media event. It's an organizing thing. And this is, you know, I think the most important way we can honor Emmett's memory and the best justice that we can get for Emmett Till at this point is to join the movement that his mother worked so hard to launch.
Well, I'm going to go back to that trial and say that the two who were acquitted never charged with murder, partially. The jury never actually heard Carolyn Bryant's testimony, the woman that you spoke to much later. When you did speak to her, yes, did she express any regret about what had happened?
Her testimony was despicable. It did not bring about Emmett's death. And as you say, the jury didn't hear it. The jurors, there was a local college student who interviewed 9 of the 12 jurors about 3 years later. No, actually about 5 years later. But they, and all of them were never thought to convict Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam because of their, you know, their devotion to white supremacy and the sense that Emmett Till had somehow violated the customs and unwritten rules of Jim Crow.
Let me ask you, though, you spoke to her in 2007. Did you not release that information until the book came out?
Honestly, as you know, historians don't tend to think about holding a press conference and announcing their, you know, someday to be published research.
And yeah, but this was also a groundbreaking point in the case, wasn't it?
No, it actually wasn't. Everyone knew she was lying since 1955. I don't see any indication that anyone ever thought she was telling the truth. So though I thought it was, you know, poignant and interesting. To me, it historically, you know, the important thing was not merely, well, not, it was not, her testimony was not the important thing. To me, I think it's sort of an odd thing to focus on when what happened as a result of the case so profoundly transformed American history. It seems odd to focus on that, which, you know, didn't have much impact.
Well, let me ask Katina. We've got just a minute left. I know Taraji Henson is set to produce and star in a film about Emmett Till. She is making connections in her pre-talk about this to current events like the death of Trayvon Martin, for example, another young black man killed by an American citizen. Really, just 30 seconds to wrap. Where are we as a country 63 years after the murder of Emmett Till?
You know, it's sad, but I think that in some respects that we are going backwards. And I think that's why both books are important, because unless we are honest with our past, we really can't move forward, can we?
Well, Katina Rankin, thank you so much. I believe it's your birthday today.
It is.
Well, happy birthday. And Timothy Tyson, thanks so much for filling us in more on the story of Emmett Till, the narrative that will be added to as this Justice Department investigation is reopened.